It's time for Intersections, where art and science meet, your weekly hour of conversation, where you learn about curious ideas, creative works, and interesting phenomena with your host, Mark Kiesling, the founder of the Da Vinci Pursuit, and Krista Hoffman-Longton, Assistant Dean for Faculty Affairs and Professional Development at the Indiana University School of Medicine. Now, it's time for Intersections, where art and science meet.
I'm Mark Kiesling, the founder of the Da Vinci Pursuit, where we create a museum without walls so artists, scientists, and the community can create unique interactions and conversations. In today's conversation, we're going to be looking at the ethics of artificial intelligence, including concerns of the lack of oversight, how private companies use AI software to make determinations about health and medicine, employment, creditworthiness, and even criminal justice. But there's been a group of artists and scientists who's been exploring these ideas through the arts in a 10-day residency program that was hosted by Indie Convergence. And with us today, we have Caitlin Negron, the executive director of Indie Convergence. Hi, Caitlin.
Hi, Mark.
And then I have five other participants in it. And so why don't we just go around and each of you introduce yourself? So let's start with Louise.
Lou or Louise, take your pick.
The one. Lou, how about since we've got you first?
Okay. Hi, I'm Lou Harry. I am a playwright, theater maker, and journalist based in Indianapolis.
Great. And Louise?
Hi, I'm Antonio. I'm the dancer, choreographer, director here based in Indianapolis, born in Puerto Rico, raised in Connecticut.
Wow. And Ben?
I'm Ben Moniz. I am a theater maker and performance artist and a pilot based in New York City.
That's great. And Paulina?
I'm Paulina Guerrero. I am a theater artist, dancer, and folklorist, originally from the East Coast and living in the Midwest.
Great. So Caitlin, why don't we start off with what is a residency and why an Indie Convergence and what makes this one different than a lot of residencies?
Sure. So our residency is 10 to 14 days, depending on the year that we do it. And the reason and the energy behind it is that we really want artists and scientists, creatives of all kinds from different genres who don't usually work together to come together in a shared space to learn from one another. And that has grown since 2008 and started as a way for myself and our other founders who were very early in our career just to find common language between different genres. And it's grown to expand into so many different areas. It's different because the entire residency is collaborative. Whereas you might think of other residencies where you go and you're just like in a cabin, perhaps, or like in woods, sort of just like thinking and maybe working by yourself, which is incredibly useful. We don't do that at all. You're working 12 hours a day with a cohort of people to work on your own project that may or may not be genre specific, teach a workshop, and then take everyone else's workshop that's taught at an introductory level, and then collaborate on a larger overarching project that always has a director who's guiding it. And the idea again is just to think about your work in maybe a sideways way that you've never thought about it. So we'll put a dancer and then have a visual artist work with them so that they can think about their work from that way and so on. So I could keep talking about it, but that's the nuts and bolts of our residency program.
That's great. And I was lucky to be a fly on the wall for a lot of it and to see things. One of the most amazing things, Caitlin, to me, was that we went into a space that was under construction. But it wouldn't be unlike some theater spaces that are always kind of under construction.
Sure.
But it kind of made itself. It created itself. The space did, meaning people did things, but it became full with things. There were props and there were all kinds of things that began to happen. Is that part of the whole way of doing it?
That just sort of happens every year. I don't think we... Yes, that's when you put you know, 10 to 14 creative people in a space for 2 weeks, people can't help themselves. So there's going to be someone with a yoga mat out who's stretching in the corner. There's going to be, you know, someone who's working on a little puppet in a corner and then has to put it down quietly and quickly. You know, someone always has some sort of musical instrument, and that it just is a space that always grows and evolves based on the people who are filling it. And so what we tell people is, you know, we'll give you the supplies and things that you need to work on your project, but the best tools in the room are the people that are surrounding you. And people always take that to heart and always give and receive the whole time. But yeah, the physical space always gets, you can't see me gesturing, always gets a little nutty because you have so many projects and so many little bits and pieces, literally and figuratively in and around the space, that it's just this sort of creative little playground that happens.
That's really great. So all of you participated, and I know when you first came, so any first impressions that you all want to share about when you first went into space, you were collaborating, your expectations or not expectations, who wants to take that on? Go ahead.
I mean, I do most of my work in New York, and so it's just nice to kind of walk into the space and see so much space. You know, that was ours for, you know, more than 45 minutes, but for 10 days. And then just to kind of start to meet everybody and, you know, the artists and the scientists who were there to work, which, you know, particularly excited me given the nature of my work, to kind of have all those different sorts of brains and start to meet everybody that first night and to get a feel for the space was really, really nice.
That's great. No, I mean, and your work, Ben?
So for the past few years, I've been working on a piece of documentary theater that is about the relationship between exploration and colonialism and the relationship between science and the arts. And so this was a particularly good residency for me to explore those ideas in some new ways. Yeah.
Others, how did you feel when you first were there the first couple of days?
You can be honest, everybody.
Paulina?
Sure. I am being honest, and it felt a little bit like a love fest for me. Like, we were all just really excited and like excited to meet each other and excited to just have the opportunity. At least that's how it was for me. I think post COVID, it's, you know, just after all of the isolation of COVID, especially, it felt extremely poignant to me to be like, oh my gosh, like, this is happening. We get to all be together in the same space and to be working on these things. It felt like a gift, you know, it really did. And of course, like towards the end, it's like, you know, the wheels start to come off a little bit. There's a little bit of pressure. People are trying to get stuff done, but that's how it felt to me in the beginning. And maybe I'm alone in that, but that's what.
Now, Paulina, and more about your own work.
So I worked in collaboration with Rory Willetts on a piece that I think right now is called Mary H. It's a sort of multimedia theater installation dance piece based on the Ballad of Mary Hamilton, which is about a young woman who goes to court and becomes pregnant and tries to give herself an abortion. It's a 17th century ballad. So there's a lot of themes in there that we explored, and also a lot of technical aspects that we got to explore and to collaborate with other people to see how it all worked and came together. It was really wonderful.
Wow, that's really nice. Anybody else?
For me, it felt really good. It felt like something I haven't had in 3 years. I used to move to Indy 3 years ago. So it felt like I was able to be myself in a creative way, in a physical way. And I felt very welcome to just be open with my emotions and how I felt those days and each day. I feel supported by everyone, every day with my personal stuff when in the moment. So it was something really special that I was looking for here in Indy for 3 years. And I felt like I finally found something that was, you know, what I needed. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Dina or Lou, do you want to?
I really went into the situation. Hi, I'm Dina Toler. I went into the situation not with any expectation other than just to be happy that I was there in the moment. And so I was just blown away. It became, it was a safe space to, you know, be okay on things that I geek out about and to have my, be expressive and silly and compassionate about things that I sometimes keep inside, because it's not often that you're around in such a hodgepodge of beautiful artists. It became a safe space to fail, you know, and that's what I really loved when I thought back on it. The collaborative part is it basically was a science experiment in and of itself. You know, we took these different components together. We had the hypothesis of what this is supposed to be, what will come. We found out what things work and what things don't work. And the end result was beautifully scientifically artist. So it was the space in and of itself and the people and everything. It was art and science in a beautiful way.
That's really great, Lou.
There was, to a degree, a kind of, somebody described it as having lots of tabs open on your computer. And I thought that was, I forget who said that, but that was a wonderful analogy for it. Because on the one hand, you have your own project and you have these wonderful talents of other people that you're just learning about and figuring out how they can collide with your project and enhance it, make it different, make you think differently about your own project. But then there's also the element of how can I serve this other person's project who I'm working on? And how can I be useful to that, which helps you think more about your own stuff and what you actually have to bring to the table, which was really kind of empowering and a powerful thing for me. And then there was the element of just being a student for other people's workshops, which was great. It was a chance to, on the one hand, just play, and it felt like a summer camp thing at times. But then it was also, hey, wait a minute, this is helping me learn to think differently about what I'm trying to create. So all of those tracks going at once, I think for some people might be overloading, but for me was just incredibly exhilarating. I was pumped every day.
That's really great. And you're talking about this kind of flow that was in there, all of you. And Lou, I think you said that pretty well, this idea that you were moving between one time being a student in somebody's workshop in the same day that you were also working on your own project and trying to make sense of that. Sometimes you were being carpenters or electricians or whatever and trying to figure that out. And then other times you also were then working on a larger group collaborative project, and also then on each other's. And so it was a really long day. I mean, 12 hours. How many days, Caitlin?
Just 10.
10 12-hour days.
Someone a while ago, and I think we started calling it's an intentional pressure cooker. And we might have cooked a little too much this year, but the idea is that a lot of things happening and with a limited amount of time, sometimes or often we find that the creators are able to just like push out of the way the ideas that aren't useful, or try something and be like, you know what? Actually, no, that doesn't work. Let's move on. Let's try that. And sometimes that's really useful. When you can just roll through a bunch of ideas, knowing that there is this little cooker that you're in. It's really long days. Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead, Ben.
I'll add to that there is something really nice about that, which is like the singular aim of it is to kind of work on what you're working and, you know, forget about your day job and forget about everything else you're dealing with. And I just kind of want to add that it was so nice, to have the financial support. I think you guys applied for a grant this year and were able to support everybody. And I did not have to worry about anything at all, you know, and they were long days, but they were long days all kind of with the aim of working on that stuff. And I wrote more in those 10 days than I've written in the past 10 months. So it's a very beautiful thing. Yeah.
And also the way it was planned and scheduled with the workshops and the warm-ups in the morning, it really did help you creatively, you know? So you were able to have that pause in between to do something else that was not dance or that was not music, to be able to like find a way to create without doing what you usually do. So that was really helpful to me, at least, yeah.
Yeah, it was like a cleansing of the palate, creatively, you know, to wipe all that out and start fresh. And I love that. I loved that. Was just, oh yeah, the tabs open is how I work anyway. So being able to have structured time to go and look in those tabs and explore and get all the goodness out of one person's project, and that'll inspire yours or make you realize something else doesn't work. And I really did not literally have an opportunity until all the other things that didn't work. And all the collaborators on my project were like, okay, this is what works, this doesn't, and do this. And I like achieved flow like 1 o'clock in the morning all the way to 7 o'clock of the day that we had the culminating event. And it was the most purposeful, fun time I've probably ever had. And want that again, and love that the part that I was able to present, although it wasn't finished, it was a beautiful collaboration that has given me such a springboard of things that I'm going to work on. So.
Yeah, I get a sense that in what you're describing now, but in what happened, collaboration was really real. You know, I think many artists and scientists say they collaborate. And I wonder sometimes if they really do, or if one of them has the idea and the others just, you know, are there to be the dancer or to be the writer or whatever. In this case, I really got a sense, and from what you're talking about, that you guys really both gave and were able to maybe even move off of what your original thoughts were about how to go about something. Did that happen for a lot of you?
Absolutely. I mean, I can, for an example of the piece, I came in with a scene from a play I'm working on that basically takes place within the mind of a woman who's in a sensory deprivation tank. So it was kind of hallucinogenic and had those elements to it, but it became a very, not very different thing, but a heightened thing because of Ben's audio talents and being able to record and do stuff with sound that we weren't able to do. I had pictured it as a spoken monologue, a lot of it. Well, Paulina, who's a movement theater person, being in a very still position, floating above the stage in a harness, showed me things just in rehearsals by having her mouth some of the lines, not mouth some of it. It heightened that hallucinogenic effect. We had a visual artist who created props for it. I hadn't thought about using shadow projection or, you know, overhead projection things on the wall until I was in a workshop where we did that. A vocal piece, a narrator in the beginning of the piece, it became a musical piece there because of what happened in a workshop and the talents that that artist could bring to it. So it really did become, I mean, I don't feel in a very good way, I don't feel like that piece is mine right now, which is what I love in collaboration. I love to see things evolve in those ways. So that was just every day, every time we had a session, it morphed in a different, I think, more interesting way, thanks to these artists that I was blessed to be in proximity to.
That's really, anybody else, what did you feel about collaborating?
Yeah, my kind of take on just how my expectations were kind of turned and surpassed is that I came in with a very specific goal to, you know, write a scene or three and kind of a specific new idiom for this piece that I've been working on for a while, you know, to bring some Bill Nye energy into it, some, you know, classroom instruments, some of that just, you know, 11-year-old precocious, I know what I'm talking about energy. And in my rehearsals, we did a really good job of like collaborating and finding that thing and using everybody's talents for it. But then I was just so surprised the last morning. I just wanted to write like, you know, a quick little intro. This is what I'm working on and these are these things. The last morning, I just surprised myself just by being in the headspace and talking about these ideas with all these people for 10 days. I was able to just, you know, do some of the best writing to frame this piece that I've ever done. And, you know, I just used it Wednesday night. I, you know, presented a shorter slice of the piece in Manhattan on Wednesday. And, you know, it was valuable to just like literally have it in my back pocket. It was great.
Wow, that's very great. You know, I noticed the other thing that I noticed in with all of you is really a lot of progression of your ideas. And so you, but you were drawing from not just the collaboration, but it was interesting to me how important the workshops were, Caitlin, to be a part of that, that you had to step out and learn something and then that person had to teach it too. And I think that was really important.
Yeah. We incorporated the workshops into the very first residency that we did as that idea of, you know, how do people who work in a very specific genre, how do you really break down those barriers? And one of the really funny things that happened, I believe in our second year, someone was leading a project and they said, I'll just take a beat. And then, but we had dancers, actors, and musicians in the room. And so to an actor, that means something very specific. To a dancer, it means something different. And then to a musician, they're like, but what, how, you know, what beat? And so that's why the workshops have been so essential to explain that language. What does it mean when someone says something? You know, what's their expectation professionally when you walk into a room? How do you solve problems? And so that's how collaboration is able to really happen. You know, my background is a dancer. I used to just be really annoyed, just full disclosure, with musicians who'd be like, oh, it's 8 o'clock, done. And then they just like get up and leave. And you're like, whoa. And it's just a different culture and a different way that they work and a different set of expectations. And so the workshops are a way to help with that collaboration. And then if I can keep talking about it, you know, a lot of times artists who practice in art are asked to teach, but they aren't teachers. And then that ends up with people having weird experiences with the art sometimes, can, not always. And so we want to give artists who are really, really great at what they do an opportunity to practice teaching before they're in a room full of third graders or, you know, whoever else, so that they can understand the flow of a class, what really is an introductory, you know, I might think something is introductory, but it isn't because, you know, my whole life is whatever genre. So we just felt like twofold, A, break it down to really become a collaborator, and then B, so that you can start to hone your skills if you choose as a teacher, because it's two very different skill sets, teaching and creating. And oftentimes people put them together and they're just different skills.
Yeah. And when you're collaborating, and these are not your usual collaborators that you're with, that teaching also becomes essential when you're trying to get somebody to do just your piece, right? So being able to get the right language and break it down so that somebody can do the part that you want them to do in their role, that's really, I think, part of what you're saying.
Yeah. And I mean, every year we're blown away by how the creatives come into the room and find all of these ways that they didn't know that they had to explain what and how they do. And that is one of our like greatest joys as the facilitators, is to see everyone dig a little bit deeper and go around a different corner with how they work, how they explain what they do, and how they meet people in the middle. It's just, and then each cohort comes up with their own sort of shorthand too, which is very cool. It's a really exciting thing for us to watch blossom every year.
One of the things I think is interesting too is two things that you mentioned that I think are really important in art and science collaborations, but even among artists. And that's the idea that we don't necessarily have a common language. And so just like you said with the word beat and counting things, but there's many, many things that we don't have a common language. That makes it difficult for collaboration. Sometimes we have to actually get to where we can understand that better. And then the second one you said is really the willingness, and this isn't every artist that can do it or scientists, the willingness to allow someone else to modify your idea. And there's a lot of artists who can't do that. you know, they're solo and they feel that they can't get something from that. How did you all feel as artists being able to be free to allow other people in? Paulina.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because my piece has been a one-person show, like a one-woman show. And so it felt really like, is this happening? Like, I get to collaborate with people on this show that's just going to be me. And it was really amazing because, like, Luis did this incredible improv in the box. And I was like, I just would not have seen that if I didn't open it up to other people being in there and for his exploration to take place. And we videotaped that, and that's what ended up in the final show. And Alice and Gilles constructed this amazing soundscape. And Charlie is totally a dancer. I just need to convince him that he is. So it was just incredible to see all these pieces come together, even though the final showing of it was me and Rory's video. It still was really important to go through that process with people, and to also be told, like, that's not, I don't think that's working, which is also really, really helpful. I don't think that anything gets created in a vacuum. I think that it's a building upon previous work. It's a building upon a process. This idea of, like, this solitary genius that just comes up with something out of thin air, that has not been my experience. And I think when you really start to read about famous artists and their process, that's not their experience either. Just sort of like the scientific method, right? Where it's like a question or a proposal is built on a previous finding. I think the creative spirit is a lot like that too. That's why it's really, I think it's good to remember sort of our artistic and creative ancestors and predecessors and the work that they've done. Because we stand on their shoulders. That's how I see it.
And even just like Ben wasn't a part of my workshop or my final project at all, but he happened to be there when, you know, an idea popped up to my head and I was like, hey, you know, can you help me with this? And he ended up being so instrumental on on those places and the things that he taught me to do. And like, I've done them again. So these are like, you know, everybody gave me gifts of things that I can also just take and move forward. You know, it, you know, there were times when the dancers, when Luis and them had to shake me and say, this is not working. This is what we're going to do. And I have to be like, oh, okay. You know, or definitely, you know, I had Rory and Gilio saying to me, this is not going to work with this vibration. We're just going to take this over and make it work for you. And I was like, okay, that is so cool. So it was just great to be able to have those little fires be put out by everybody else's collaboration.
I am so inspired by all this. I'm talking with the residency artists and staff from Indie Convergence's recent residency program, where they came together, and we'll talk more about this in a minute, but to kind of interpret in a larger work, artificial intelligence. And we'll be right back.
This is Jürgen Jungbauer from the Heidelberg House on Pendleton Pike here in Indianapolis. Join me this Sunday for German Music Hour. And even if you don't speak the language, I hope you enjoy the music and the rhythm and the beat on this radio station every Sunday at 1 o'clock. It's only here on 88.7 WICR.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Kiesling, and today I'm having a conversation with Indie Convergence's residency staff and participants. And we've been talking a lot back and forth about how this was unique in terms of it being art and science. And Ben, I think you kind of represent both those worlds in one. But so why don't you talk about that experience of both science and art?
Great. So the piece I've been working on for the past few years is about kind of the Apollo moon landings and Vietnam, and the fact that they were happening at the same time. And what that tells us about kind of this kind of search for knowledge and going to new places, and also, you know, ways we've been historically bad at that. And lately it's also been more so about my own relationship to this material as an artist and kind of branching into kind of a wider practice of figuring out how, as an artist who kind of has decent science chops, how, you know, I can help foster work, or, you know, it's a lot of questions right now. But anyway, I just want to read like about a paragraph for you guys real quick. This gorgeous book of art that NASA commissioned in the 60s. The book was like published in 1972, and it is just 800 pages of like Rockwell and Wyeth and, you know, all these beautiful sketches and paintings. And this is what it says at the front of it. Those of us involved in the day-to-day fulfillment of missions are, by the nature of our tasks, concerned with the immediate future and have had too little time to pause and consider what the distant future may think of our efforts. And yet we have a solemn obligation to leave for future generations a truthful record at all levels of perception. And for this, the imagination and insight of the artists are invaluable assets. We at NASA feel that we made a wise decision when we called upon the artists for help. Machines can duplicate and preserve the cold facts, but the emotional impact and the hidden meaning remain within the scope of the artist and the poet. And that's fascinating to me. I think it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thought. But it's also really interesting to me that like four pages before that, the book is dedicated to the spirit of Columbus. And so that's kind of a funny thing to get into. And also when I read that now, that's been in my piece for like a year or two now, that paragraph. But when I read that now, I'm like, right, is the role of the artist kind of just to document and paint like nice pictures of the moon for you so we can kind of capture that feeling that you're going after? Or can we have a more involved role to like kind of inform going into the process rather than just documenting something, or to interrogate, you know, to go further than informing and to ask why aren't you looking at things this way? And so I don't know, I've got a lot of scientist friends in New York, as well as artist friends. And these are the questions I'm trying to ask right now. And Indie Convergence was just a really lovely time for me to kind of, you know, evolve and grow in this space. So I don't know if that kind of sparks anybody else's brain on any of this, but it felt worth sharing.
You know, when you're talking about that, Ben, it really, your questions are really fundamental to this whole idea of art and science converging together. And one of those that you were mentioning in there is, are you just the hack for someone? Either way, in other words, do artists just illustrate, or, you know, dance a piece or whatever to illuminate something?
Right. Because I remember you talking about Indie convergence, that's a word I can say, about how sometimes, you know, scientists will just commission an artist to like make a pretty painting, yeah. Or sometimes, and I hate bad dramaturgy, sometimes an artist will just like kind of grab one fun little idea from the science and make a thing about that. And, you know, if you look back at kind of, you know, natural history and the state of it in the 19th century, where life drawing was kind of an integral part of the science, that kind of work fascinates me. And I'm just wondering, I mean, there are bad practices in 19th century natural history as well. But how can we find that energy where the art is integral to the science and vice versa? And where can we find art literate scientists and science literate artists who are willing to collaborate rather than just kind of present shadows of each other's work?
Yeah, I think for all of you, you were able to, I think, as artists, be able to challenge a little bit. I think that's some of what artists can do, right? Challenge what is just seems like to be obvious to people and it's not, right? Or to challenge an idea that maybe fundamentally has got some problems in it. I think artists have this ability to see that. And I think that's a benefit to the scientists if they really take that to heart, because they may ask more fundamental questions about their own work. What did others of you feel about that? Paulina?
I remember I had this conversation with Claudia, who was one of the artists, after one of the conversations about AI. She was like, I feel like some of this has been a crash course in nihilism, which I thought was hilarious. you know, because as a scientist, she's approaching this as like, there's a problem and we're going to do these experiments and then there's this solution. Whereas like you get a group of artists together and suddenly we're deconstructing, criticizing, unpacking, unfolding. And if you kind of keep going down that route, things can get pretty dark pretty quick. It was really interesting to hear that because I was like, well, I don't want to be a nihilist. And so that kind of shifted my thinking and the process about looking at AI during the residency. And also I think what Robert said about using the rug, about like sort of taking the rug out from underneath yourself when you're trying to grapple and understand these problems and how to talk yourself out of it, which I found to be really useful. I think there's an argument to be made that they're not really separate and they never have been. I don't know of any dancer that's not also a master of anatomy, physiology, movement science. There's a lot that goes into being a great dancer that is science-based. I don't know a lot of visual artists that are not really well-tuned with things like architectural structure or geometric spaces, you know, things that maybe are not right away attached to this idea of what science is, but are definitely infusing the craft. And so in a way, it's kind of like, and that's what Da Vinci did, right? So in a way, it's kind of just a very logical next step to just get us all in the room together to solve a problem or to create a thing. The siloing of the two things is, I think, something that academia sort of came up with that isn't necessarily maybe useful anymore.
Plus both, I was just going to add, plus both are wrestling with the idea of what it is to be a human being.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of the sort of AI talk we were having is about, but I think that's also about what we're wrestling with as artists and trying to tell human stories. Is trying to figure out what exactly it is, not exactly, but, you know, what it is to be a fallible flesh and blood human being trying to wrestle with these big questions and to live our lives and figure out how not to be nihilistic in the face of certain things or how to be optimistic. So, I think we're wrestling with a lot of the same questions, but sometimes coming at it through different doors.
That totally is what happened to me. It was like I was drenched in thinking about the science and so much that it produced the art. You know what I mean? My final presentation ended up being called to Ode to Henrietta Lacks, and the fact that she was not on the radar in my mind at all when I first started this. And then, you know, just in thinking about AI and thinking about, you know, artists or time travelers, and, you know, we can go back and forth, you know, between time and space. And then finding out that Henrietta Lacks's cells were the first one that were sent into space, you know, in 1964. And, you know, what intelligence will do if they come upon her cells, you know, what is that? What are they going to take from that? And it just, you know, it just opened up a whole thing in my brain. And so definitely looking forward to exploring that more.
So when you looked at this culminating project, and I know it was new to a lot of you, although Ben, I think it's probably something you've probably thought about some, but this idea of artificial intelligence, how did you come to approach that? I mean, I'm trying to figure out how each of you, from your perspectives, tried to approach the idea that there might be something intelligent besides humans.
I can, I think Robert, is going to pop in a minute and he'll maybe have something to add that's fun. But I mean, from my perspective, I was just a facilitator, but I think I said this to many times to Luis. I was like, I can't anymore. It's too much. Like, it's just sometimes, you know, you can just keep unraveling and unraveling and unraveling. And it's the image of it and the idea of it and the science of it and then the lack of control of it, which I think is something that maybe a lot of, as collaborative and creative as artists are, it's like, but wait, I can't control any of it, is a little, makes you feel a little shaky sometimes. And that was just me sort of being a support staff to the idea and to the project and not having it infused in my own work. But there's so much research and so many ideas and so many different outcomes from one single shift in whatever that might be, that it's really, it's just a lot to digest, I think. And that's, I think looking around the space, I saw that in people's, everybody kind of had a point. They're like, okay, if an AI develops and can do this, okay. If it can do this, okay. And then there was always a red line in the sand for everybody. It was like, nope, too much. So that was kind of a fun thing to observe from my point of view. I might've taken us a little off of the subject.
No, that's perfect.
It was fun to watch because you could kind of see in everybody's faces. It was like, all right, I'm on with this. And I see how like creatively how I could contribute to like making this image or whatever. And then there was just a point where somebody would be like, nope, I'm out. I got to leave. I can't do it anymore. Yeah. It's just always kind of a fun. It was fun.
I feel like there's only so much I tried to imagine myself like being a resident of the 12th century and have somebody from today trying to, you know, explain the concepts of what's going on in the world right now, you know, having most of the world's knowledge in your pocket on a telephone, whatever that thing is, and all of those different things that would be impossible to grasp them. Well, that's kind of how I felt sometimes in, you know, as we're projecting these conversations about where the future may be heading, there's a point where my resident of the 12th century brain, yeah, just kind of went, okay, I can't grasp any more of that.
Yeah, you know, artists are a lot of times, Lou, and then you're that they are used a lot of times in that way to help with future thinking. I know that a lot of times the military has used people involved in writing theater and mystery and other things to help imagine, right, what cyber terrorism might be like or what a war might be like, because they can get out there and play with that part of it. And so this is interesting. Robert, I have Robert Necron with us now, who's the artistic director at Indie Convergence, as well as Caitlin. And Robert, I know this was your kind of directing this final thing around AI. What were your thoughts? What were you thinking about when you wanted them to do this?
I think that for me, it's the opportunity to work with varying types of artists and just kind of play in the idea. Just because there is it's the mixture of all of the emerging technologies that's what we don't understand. Like, and for each of the pieces of technology that are about to change things in a very fun, that have the ability to change things in a really fundamental way, even alone, there's kind of a cliff that people were kind of talking about where it's like, and now once we hit here, now we have no idea because we can't even imagine it. And then when they all mix together, it's a big black box. And I guess for me, the more time I've spent with it, it's like, well, you know, history has always been a big black box and so has all technology. So we're not doing anything new, just different. It's just a different way of, the human race has fundamentally changed many times, I think, you know? And this is I guess what's different now is we're in control of it, or could be completely in control of it. for me, that was the really interesting thing. And for AI in general, I think what really fascinates me about it is how the way that we interact with it now is going to have a huge effect on our future, in a future that we can't even understand. And so in that, we didn't fully get into this in the piece, but in that sense that it is a child in a way, something that we're gonna nurture and that it's just gonna kind of become its own thing eventually. Yeah, I mean, and all the artists that interacted with it just gave these huge gifts and like brought such intellect to all of it, and helped me notice and realize some things that I had that I wasn't even looking at. So that's a long-winded answer.
But no, that's a great answer.
Yeah. I've worked with a lot of those previous cliffs you just mentioned, Robert, like both the Birth of Aviation. I've done like a lot of reading and artistic work there. And, you know, kind of the earliest decade of human spaceflight as well. It's particularly fascinating to read like the science fiction that was written in the 1940s about space travel when we knew it was possible, but it wasn't quite there yet. And I've never really worked with anything kind of in that, you know, space that's not in the past. I've only, you know, kind of worked with it in the past. And it was super fascinating to kind of work with those what ifs as our own what ifs and not looking back at other people's. And one of my best friends from college is a PhD biologist, works with machine learning to just process a bunch of photographs of the ocean around Antarctica to, you know, the computer will pick out where the whales are so they can do population surveys more quickly. And so to have like a lot of firsthand experience with what, you know, artificial intelligence and machine learning is doing now, and then not having thought much about, you know, this explosion, this cliff that you've talked about, it was a super fascinating space to come into and explore for a few weeks. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, a lot of our listeners can identify if they've been to Disney World. If you went to the older Epcot when they had, you know, the Wheel of Progress, and you went around and they were really good about giving us the historic perspective of most eras. But when they got into about 1970, 80, and they were trying to anticipate what the 2000s would be like, then it became really a joke for all of us that are living in it, because what they thought they'd have was really basically still 80s stuff kind of repurposed. They didn't have some of the most fundamental things. And I think that's interesting. I think every time we try to predict the future, that it's there. Just a reminder that the Da Vinci Pursuit brings together artists and scientists and members of the community to engage in conversations that explore the intersections between art and science. We encourage you at home to talk about what we've been talking about, to have conversations about artificial intelligence and art and science with people at your own home. And we'll be right back.
This is Dave Baghdad, host of The Kitchen Party Kaylee. I hope you'll join me every Sunday at 10 p.m. for the best music from Ireland, Scotland, Canada, and the U.S. The Kitchen Party Kaylee, Celtic music from across the globe and across town.
Welcome back. I'm Mark Kiesling, and I'm having a conversation with the resident artists and scientists from a recent Indie Convergence event that brought for 10 days, unbelievably, 12 hours a day, a bunch of people together to collaborate. And I'm curious, as I know it's Caitlin and Robert, to the artist, how did this influence where you're going next? And what are you thinking of doing next?
Well, one of the things, I'm continuing to work on the piece that that we presented and worked on a scene from, but also the nature of the collaborations have sparked things. Dina and I are putting together a play reading of another piece of mine that I hope she's going to be acting in and directing. So those kind of things happen, both with the material that we're working on, but also with the wonderful people that we've had the opportunity to work with.
That's so cool. So through the collaboration, Dina, right, all of a sudden you become closer in terms of respect and trust.
Yeah, absolutely. It was just so cool. He sent me the piece and I was like, oh, wow. And my mind exploded into a million ideas. So I'm so looking forward to getting things off the ground with that. And for my piece, it has definitely just blossomed into something else that I'd like to collaborate and make it a multi-tactical, a multi-sensory piece. I got to finally do my visual artist thing, got to decorate the cart, but I want to make the costumes. I want to have a true choreography that tells the story kind of Henrietta Lacks. And my machine at the end was basically a child's play version of AI because it was the machine, and yet I had humans connected to it, but it was the vibrations from the machine that controlled how these humans acted. So I'm looking forward to really doing some research on Henrietta Lacks, and also contacting her family to give her to get permission and to really push this as much as I can, and be able to go and travel and visit Ben and ask Ben, because he didn't get to hear my music until the end, and he really liked it. And I would love that to be something that we could collaborate on earlier, because there's
all kinds of- Come to Brooklyn, do it.
I will be there, you don't have to tell me twice. So yeah, it is just, it's opened up a lot of opportunities. I've had people get in touch with me based on pictures that they've seen on it. So I just look forward to making it science and art in a really big way.
That's great. Louise, I think you wanted to jump in there. Did you? No? Okay. Anybody?
My little ones, yeah. Hi. For my piece, I would like to evolve it into a lamp piece, play with the ideas that I started in the convergence. Right now I have many ideas, as I went in with many ideas, and many of them got squashed, many of them come true. It's just time will tell, but I'm all about the creative journey. I'm not rushing things into a big show right away. So I'm excited to see what that creative journey makes it blossom to. But something I got from Indica Version was live music. Pam, in the beginning of it, it was gonna be recorded music, and Pam had this UFO looking thing that she brought out, and that kind of made me realize the whole piece at that moment during the week of 10 days. So I'm excited to bring that into form somehow, some way, and that's that for me.
Ready else? Paulina?
Yeah, Rory and I started working on Mary H. during lockdown. And so it was not planned by any means that the SCOTUS leak about Roe v. Wade happened right in the middle of Indie Convergence. So the piece is still pretty relevant. Rory and I are definitely interested in continuing to work on it. There's been some talk about, let's go to Edinburgh Fringe Festival next year. But of course, funding is always key there, and an very unwieldy set piece. So we're exploring and keeping our eyes open for any opportunities that might come up. But Rory and I are definitely still interested in continuing to work on the project, because we really just kept the fire going.
That's exciting. Ben?
First of all, I'm just so jealous of everybody that actually lives in Indianapolis and is like, oh yeah, we were hanging out and working on this thing. And I'm like, I haven't talked to you guys since we left. But it's lovely to see some of you now. My project, like I said a few minutes ago, I got to share a nice little slice of it at an experimental theater New Works night that a friend hit me up to perform in just this Wednesday. And it was great, just kind of putting some of those ideas that I kind of fleshed out at Indie Convergence back on stage so quickly. The plan with the piece, I've done a performance on the 50th anniversary of every single moon landing since Apollo 11 in 2019. And finally, the last one, Apollo 17, is coming up this December. So the plan is to kind of have a more or less working version of a full-length version of the piece to perform on that anniversary. And then once I'm done kind of finishing my four-year observation of that period of history that happened 50 years ago, to put some polish on the whole thing and do a nice run or tour of it in 2023. And Rory Willits and I hung out a little bit in Columbus, Indiana on the way back down. And he grew up there, and we just had a lot of good conversations about doing a run of the piece in this church that's also a venue that looks like a giant UFO. So stay tuned, Midwest folks, and other folks. That's where we're going with this. I'm hoping to wrap it up soon, and Indie Convergence really gave me some nice time to, you know, when you've been working on ideas for 4 years, to then have the dedicated space to really just like think about them without anything else, was really lovely. And, you know, it helped the piece out a lot, and it's going places. So
yeah. That's great. I know, Robert and Caitlin, I know that you do this in more than Indianapolis, that there are other locations. You want to talk about that and how it might be different where you go?
Sure. I'll start. Yeah. So we have partners in Jacmel, Haiti, and then in London, Ontario. And so we've done versions of it in both places. And I think the interesting thing that you mentioned at the top of the show, Mark, was like, oh, this space that you had, this big under construction empty place, evolved and grew with the people who are there. And that's what happens. You know, you take an idea and you put it somewhere else, and it's going to change based on the environment that it's in, the physical building, the culture, the country. If you want to talk more about, Robert does more of the traveling usually.
Yeah, sure. So when we're funded in the way that we want to be funded, the umbrella project essentially goes to all three countries. And so it's the same through line and the same piece being worked on, but with three different groups that year. And the idea is to really be able to bring that umbrella kind of to fruition. So the first time we experimented with that, it was Growing Human. And I was working with Ashley Benninghoff. So we, in Haiti, we are working with another community center called Sakalaka Well. And it's completely community owned and operated, but we've been working for quite a few years now to rebuild a new facility because the original facility was lost. So that's actually, we all went to school together to learn how to build earthships. Which I highly suggest you just Google earthships. They'll go on a fun little journey. They're just gorgeous. But they use 70% recycled materials, collect their own water, grow their own food, handle their own sewage, and heat and cool themselves passively. So, and Caitlin's pulling this up in front of me, but I would rather see it. So we worked on it there, and where what it looks like in Haiti is normally we bring fewer artists and house everyone there, and then we work with a community center, Send Out Jacmel, and then with a dance company, Grand Laku, which is like the large shared space, like the large shared park, the Laku. So we will go in with dancers and visual artists, and they will then work and collaborate with artists throughout the 2 weeks that we're there. And then while that's happening, we're building and working on the new space with building the earthship. And then we do a show with the artists that came and all of the other artistic groups that we work with in Jacmel, and kind of do a show in whatever stage of fruition the new facility is in. And it's outside, it overlooks the water, it's on this beautiful hillside. So that's always really fun. The community is able to come and see this awesome show and see the artists that they work with side by side actually do something totally different than they're used to seeing them do, which is really fun. Just as an example, you know, working on Growing Human, we were brought back to the sense of like, that's where we really started thinking about what is it a false idea that like all technology is amoral, right? Because if you're working on something that is specifically pulling you away from the natural world, is the natural world essentially right and good? I'm doing air quotes here, we're on the radio, so and that's a question, that's a statement. And so that really opened up a lot of our discussion about nanotechnology and how, you know, technology may be working with the world, stuff like that. But then we then took it directly after that to Canada, to Toronto at York University. And then we ended up working with a lot of students and a lot of adjunct professors, other artists that are just working in near York University, and that brought this like kind of heady discussion back to all of what was really a very visceral experience to this, this very kind of like we're living in our brains now again, instead of feeling this idea in our bodies. And bringing it through all those things was just amazing.
You know, Robert, that, you know, just, and Caitlin, that moving it around, being able to work with different artists, seeing that different kind of work, this is amazing. And I wanted people to get a sense that you're Indianapolis based, but you also are out there elsewhere in the world working. I want to thank all of you for the time that we've been able to spend with each other, the time that I got to have with being able to observe the whole process and see that. It was a thrill for me. Until next time, I'm Mark Kiesling, reminding you to tune in again when we explore more curiosities from the intersections of art and science.
You've been listening to Intersections, where art and science meet, with your host, Mark Kiesling, the founder of the Da Vinci Pursuit, and Krista Hoffman-Longton, Assistant Dean for Faculty Affairs and Professional Development at the Indiana University School of Medicine. Just a reminder, the Da Vinci Pursuit brings together artists, scientists, and members of the community to engage in conversation that explore the intersections between art and science. We encourage you to explore further in conversation with others. Any of the ideas explored in today's show at www.thedaVinciPursuit.com.